Integrated Rhythm, Laurel Ryan Interview, Part 2. Love it, enjoy it, caress it, let it love and enjoy and caress your ears, because it is wonderful. Also, don't forget, this incredible music is Baron Ryan. That's Laurel's brother, and this music is part of his new project, which is all rights-free music. It's amazing. If you want to hear more about it, we will talk about it more at the break. But if you just can't wait, go over to firstofitskind.net. That's firstofitskind.net, where you can read all about this amazing project. He's a badass. He's a composer, and he does really fancy performances, and he even does TED Talks and that kind of stuff. He's pretty awesome. So, on with the interview.
I think that also gets us into this standard of Black excellence that people seem to have to be able to meet. So when you think about the way this also, there's, of course, because there's a part of this experience that applies to everyone. So if you think about instructors, and you two have both, like Bobby full time, Chisomo, teaching dance at least. Something. Yeah, burgeoning, yeah. And in other spaces, yeah. The majority of Black dancers who come into the dance with another codified dance experience, where they have an expert level, where they could potentially teach another Black art form at your event, they get hired before those of us who come in with any other experience, any other life experience that might make them equally good teachers. Because, you know, every dance event is like, well, you know, what else can we offer these folks? And how do we involve the, how do we kind of cover the modern iterations of the music that we all listen to, blah, 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 blah. People, I understand as an organizer myself, like wanting to create a richer experience. But so there's that thing. So, people find more value in you as a Black person in the dance community, person of any color, if you can teach hip hop, house, whacking, locking, break set, like if you tap, if you have something else that is Black that you can contribute. And then once you've proven yourself capable of not good, not bad, just capable of teaching classes in that. And you'll have dancers come to that because it's, you know, it's kind of novice or novel, because they, you know, you don't typically get offered another Black dance experience, or might feel uncomfortable just like finding the nearest, South Central African movement class in your hometown, and be like, I'm just gonna learn this. Especially if you're, you know, a progressive Lindy Hopper, aware of appropriation. Well, then why not take this opportunity to learn it? So you're gonna have, whether or not you're a good teacher, you're gonna have people in your class. So there's that. And then there is the issue of self-sustainability. So if you need to make money for yourself before you start teaching swing dancing, let me phrase this a different way. Think of the full-time Black dance instructors who you know of. What were they doing before they were full-time dance instructors? Was it a high-paying job? Do they have a spouse that supports them? Do they come from a family that could support them if their finances didn't work out? Like if the teaching thing bobbled for a while, because there was a period when I decided, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to try it out. I haven't been able to really dedicate myself to like finding a partner or you know, doing the like competition into teaching track, because I've had a job that often requires me to work weekends and also doesn't pay me enough to just get myself places and then let the organizations take care of the rest. I've been burned a few times by organizers who just wanted, you know, a black face there and were like, you'll work and you're dark enough and like cut corners because I was just like trying to get my name out there. Every bad experience leads to a better writer. But it was, that's a tip. You take that to the bank.
But Laurel has stated one of the great truths of swimming instruction. My writer started off like a very loving paragraph. And now it is several pages long. And sometimes I'll give it to someone and they'll be like, who would do that to you? And I'm like, someone did, which is why it's there now. Like,
yeah. Like, you will not stick me in a room with five other giggling people. You will not put me in a place where I'm sleeping on the floor. I will have the ability to close a door between me and the outside world. I will not have your cat or your, any of your animals, but I, especially not a cat, 'cause I am allergic to them. Even the one that was sitting in my lap, thankfully he wasn't up near my face, 'cause otherwise I would be a sneezing right now, but like, he's not allowed in my room. For good reason, I will get a sinus infection. Like, you cannot like work me until late. Like, you can't have me emceeing until the last dance and then have me doing the first class in the morning. I will not be ready for you.
I have to have at least 8 hours between when I get home from the dance and when I am expected to teach class the next morning. Notice I didn't say 8 hours of sleep, because that's too, like, I wouldn't, you know, that's too much.
Too big an ask.
Right. Yeah. But like, you have to drive me home from the dance and I have to have 8 hours before I'm supposed to be teaching again. So that I can hopefully get like 7 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that's a tough lesson to learn.
Go ahead. Bobby and I have joked that like 2020 was supposed to be like a good year for me, because I started to get into looking at writers because I started to get invited to teach at different things. And I remember reaching out to Valerie Sahlstrom, who's essentially like swing mom. And I was like, what do I need? I was asked to teach at this event. And she was like, you need to ask for a room with a door, like that, like straight up room with a door. And I was like, I would have never thought of that. And then like the other things, same thing. It's like things that you would think are common sense, but you learn.
Vegetable.
Yeah. Okay. So I was I had decided I'm in a job where I'm getting more and more depressed, because I can't see a way out of it. The thing I really want to do and that I seem to be the best at is teach people how to dance. So I'm just going to go for it. I had a pass to like World Jam in Madrid, which I'd postponed for a year, 'cause I was like, how am I ever going to get from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Madrid, Spain? On my salary, it's not going to happen. And I'd also met my friend, Thomas Prosticky, who is, was mostly raised in the States, but he's, Polish and had, returned, or he had moved to, Krakow. And he has like a practice of inviting people, like part of his training is inviting followers who he would like to practice with or teach with to his town, and then finding gigs for them and getting in as much practice time as possible. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go like teach. And like, we had met once, danced once, and he was like, look me up sometime. And I was like, you know what? I will. And so I arranged to go stay with him for like a month, a little over a month, and headed down to World Jam for a hot second. And where people were dancing so fast on marble floors, and I was the only one like, no, when everybody else was like, faster, make them dance again. And I'm like, oh, think of their bones. And then I came back to the States and was like, all right, I'm ready. And people are like, well, who's your partner? I'm like, TBD. I don't know. Great question. Tell you what, I'm international now. So how about that? And they're like, I don't think so. And then I was, mostly teaching in Tulsa, by which I mean, I started like delivering food to make ends meet. So, shockingly in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the biggest little city in Oklahoma, teaching was not a full-time thing for me. And I also didn't want to move because by this time, all of my family who had moved outside of Tulsa had returned. Teaching like that Lindy Hop is a folk dance in that it came from the people. It was not handed down to anyone from a system or formalized. It came from the people who were listening to the music. It came from the culture at a grassroots level. And I teach people about craft, which is when you think of craft, well, when I think of craft, I think, like quilting, wood turning, needlework, basket weaving, all those things that start in function and then become beautified.
Things you kind of imagine doing by firelight.
Exactly.
Sorry, that just went to my brain.
Yeah, if you can attach like the term bee, like quilting bee, sewing bee, whittling bee, basket weaving bee. I don't know if they're basket weaving bees, but like if you imagine learning it at the feet of an elder, let's craft.
There you go.
And like my grandmother taught me. Yeah. And that's very similar to how this particular dance and other like folk dances get passed through the generations. I mean, you hear people talk about, yeah, I learned this from my grandfather. Even I, my parents were from the Assemblies of God Christian denomination. My father, a pastor's child, and my mother just, child of two devout people. The Assemblies of God churches in the 50s were like, dancing, sinful. Mm. Just sinful. You can't do it. So they did not grow up dancing. And then they went to a religious school in Tulsa where they met and fell in love and overcame obstacles in the 1970s to have three beautiful biracial. Anyway, while they did not grow up dancing, like my father, when he was first like getting his career started in Tulsa, would often play for like supper clubs and country clubs and just clubs at the time. And so he was constantly watching people dance to the music he was playing to. And so I remember he would dance especially my sister and I, around our living room when we were kids. And we were doing kind of an imitation of what he was perceiving from what he saw. So he wasn't being taught like, this is the foxtrot, this is the Lindy Hop, this is the waltz. Like he was just doing what he from the piano was seeing other people do. And so, that was part of my dance heritage, is this music that was passed to him that he then passed to his children, and the dance that he learned at the feet of strangers, but still older people, that he then passed on to his children. And I could not tell you it was like sidestep, 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 sidestep. It was very even dance a lot of the time, a little waltzing to the swing waltzes, which I wish people would do more swing waltzes. They're so great. They're lovely. but we're not ready for that conversation. of when we make the a dance night sound and look more like what was happening at the time, where it's a mix of rhythmic traditions, all swung, of course, but there's Latin jazz. Anyway, so yeah, so craft. What I'm teaching right now is craft, and it does, like, dancing, teaching dance has further honed my ability. I find those circles, like teaching dance to either group full of fresh faces back when I was teaching for our local dance, which is entirely volunteer run, and then going into events with people who I probably have never met before, definitely haven't heard of me, because at the end of the dance, like every weekend, somebody would be like, "Oh, you're teaching here?" And like, yes. Or my favorite at the end of Lindy Focus. And I was like, I was all over Lindy Focus 2 years ago. I say all over. What I mean is I was performing a few times. Michelle and I were teaching together and we were doing the the camp meetings. And on the very last, on New Year's Eve, I guess it was New Year's by that time, but I was dancing with somebody and I offered to, this person asked me, they said, "Do you want to lead, follow, or switch?" And I said, "Switch," because I was there teaching as a lead. And at the end of the dance, this person said to me, "Wow, you're really good at leading." And I was like, "Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye." And I had to really check, like, to check in with myself and to be like, "Are you so vain that you just expect people to know you now? Are you one of those folks?" And then I was like, "No, my name was on the list." I mean, I don't, of course, like, if you're not taking beginner classes, you may not pay attention to who's teaching them, but it's like, thank you. I also, yeah, I mean, like, we got onto this subject because I was talking about, like, how it's very difficult. It's more difficult for people who are part of a ethnic or racial group that have been oppressed and therefore are less likely to have financial. This is, of course, not to imply that, like, there aren't, you know, plenty of middle class and upper middle class and wealthy Black people in this country. But just from what I've seen, the people who are wanting to be involved in this dancing on, like, a teaching level, a traveling teaching level, are often without a financial support system outside of their own. So if you aren't being believed when you tell people, "I would be good for your event," whether or not I'm teaching with, like, a local assistant, or if I'm bringing in an instructor who I found, or you're pairing me with somebody you found, like, either way, I'm going to add value. If they're like, "I'm not so sure," then you got to deliver some food or find another job or like. And so I look at a lot of the other potential instructors who are coming up and I wonder about their support systems. And then I, like, there is a huge difference in how Black men are treated in the scene versus Black women, regardless of colorism. It's like, first, it's cis men, and then it's colorism. Like, that's how, you know, like, that's how, like, the Black folks who are prized in this scene. And, you know, as a light-skinned person, I recognize that I have some privilege over, like, some darker-skinned women, which is so stupid, but there's a bigger belief in, like, "Oh, well, this Black man's gonna be excellent," than I'll bet this black woman knows what she's talking about. Because people really love the look of like a handsome black man dancing through the room. And then a black woman, it's like, well, are you attractive to me? Do I want to put my mouth on your mouth? If yes, then sure, I'll hire you. Like, I'll put you in front of people. I will pay attention to you. I'll come to your class. Otherwise, no, thank you. Or do I think that you have experience outside of this dance? Because otherwise, what do you know that I don't? And so I think like being involved in teaching is a really tricky balance for a lot of black dancers. Again, that balance of devaluing versus tokenism, but especially for black women to be like, we're all like, I mean, people are so different. Everybody is such an individual. I mean, people, I'm a firm believer that everybody who participates in this dance brings something of value. They bring their own voice. And if they are allowed to express it, we are all the richer as a community. But people who can teach how to teach other people how to find ways to express themselves and help them unlock that potential are few and far between. And that's not what most people are wanting from black instructors. They want you to like teach them how to do something else and then also like entertain them in an invitational or whatever. Like, it's just not, it's not the same standard as for white instructors.
I feel like something I've seen also is there are, when we think about positions of power in the scene, like the people who are organizing and hiring and really kind of determining things are predominantly white. And those individuals are therefore determining who has a voice and who gets to teach and who gets to whatnot. And so there's kind of been, you can see that there are people who've decided the way forward and like what inclusive practices look like. And so when it comes to teaching partners or hiring somebody for event, et cetera, like a lot of what you're talking about comes into play, right? So it's people determine your perceived value as a black woman. So like, okay, well, you can teach something else. So we'll have you come in and do your little song and dance and it'll be fine. Everyone will enjoy it. And then we're going to put you over there or whatever, you know, or you can't do something else. So therefore you have to be paired with somebody that we perceive to be more valuable than you. And that person also should be black. So we have the black teaching pair and you get to teach the beginners and move on, you know? And so there's their main, not be expressed or demonstrated like this support structure for upcoming black instructors. And like you said, not saying that everybody's vulnerable, but when we consider systems of oppression, when you think about racialized oppression, that does leave you more vulnerable. I know I've been in conversations where people have talked about, because as you've also alluded to, follower, and actually I'm trying to be inclusive is how I say this, follower privilege, but then also you're not strictly a follower, you also lead and you teach from that perspective. So it really is considering being female bodied, right? So there is a dynamic there where your voice and the support system is often you're disadvantaged to some degree. And we see this especially when people get pregnant and have kids and then try to reemerge into the scene. We think about people, instructors who've had babies and how many have been able to come back into the scene. And And so if you are Black and you have children, how easy is it for you to participate? And so, yeah, like, or exactly. And so do you have family members who are there to help you take care of the kids? Do you, is there some kind of daycare situation there? Because I've seen for some women accommodations taken, and those women all kind of come from a majority perspective, but I haven't seen the same accommodations for Black women. Like, I mean, I wonder if people would think, if they can even think of Black women who've had kids who re-entered the scene. I can think of one, and I've heard from her how difficult it has been to persist.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think most of the women, because I don't know which women you're talking about. So like that just shows you how few Black women are teaching. But when it comes to like the issue of bearing a child, then the only women who I can think of who have been able to transition, keep their status, so to speak, have been married to their partner, like their teaching partners, or to another prominent mm-hmm. dancer. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, or they have a parent who can travel with them, which, mm-hmm. What a privilege that would be to have retired parents who don't still have to work, who can be like, I'll come and watch your kid until 4 a.m. Absolutely. Love to. Sign me up. I'm 65 and I love it. I think a lot of, we've provided childcare at the event that I ran in Tulsa, and we had, they're members of our scenes, but they were licensed nannies, and it was still, we were hiring a pair of new parents. And so it was like, in a way, sure, we like, because we like the nannies were volunteers as well. So, you know, are still a cheap option to have two instructors who can share, not just share a room, but share a bed. And, so they can be in a place where they can have, and they don't need another room for their child because their child's not at an age where it needs to be in a separate room or, you know, whatever. They're going to keep a pretty good eye on it. They're going to go to bed earlier than most other folks, but it was, it's a marked difference as opposed to somebody whose partner, or if they're parenting alone and they don't have that same support system, I cannot imagine, what that would be like.
And actually one of the women that I'm thinking of is married, and their partner does dance, but through the process of becoming pregnant and having their child, like, has been kind of pushed out of different things. And so we value it. There are these small, seemingly innocuous things that happen, but they all contribute to edging people out who are more vulnerable. And so I think this goes back to what you were saying about, like, when we think about oppression and toxic masculinity and like white supremacy, like, we're not thinking about these monstrous beings. We're thinking about us. Like, so you, the person listening to this, the person who can see themselves in the mirror, we're talking to you. I'm talking to myself every day. asking myself these questions. How am I contributing to this, to systems of oppression? Because when we start to consider people who are away from our central way of thinking, we do little things to push them out and to not support them. And so even like Bobby, I was thinking about what you're saying about competitions, like international instructors such as yourself, like have the opportunity to choose what you might dance to. You have the gift of choice in the invitational space, in your competition space. But then when we think about other levels of dancing, those dancers don't have any kind of choice. They're subjected to a standard. So it's like you have to demonstrate that you can respond in a specific way that we want you to. But when we think about art forms and expression, like how can we shape our community so that people can show up as their full selves and create art in unique and beautiful ways, you know? But like if you are marginalized at all, then you're slowly edged out, you know, or you're at threat of slowly being edged out.
You, yes, you listening to this podcast, you can take a class from Laurel. She'll be teaching online for Lindy Groove Thursday, April 15th, 2021. The class is free to live stream on Facebook and YouTube and is at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Trust us, it will be both very good and very fun. By the way, what is that fantastic music we're listening to again? It's Baron Ryan. That's Laurel's brother, a badass pianist known for his combination of classical and jazz music. His new album, First of Its Kind, it's rights free. You heard us correct. Anyone can use it. Put it on your podcast, your YouTube video, your own music project. It's all yours. Want the album and any of his other work? Head to BaronRyan.com. Want to hear him play with Ryan's father, yet another badass pianist? Head to RyanAndRyanMusic.com. And most importantly, you can contribute to Baron's project of making rights-free music. Because as delicious as it is, you can't live off of admiration and appreciation. Go to firstofitskind.net. Check out the story, learn how awesome his project is, and help support it. That's firstofitskind.net. Hey everybody, this is Bobby White from Integrated Rhythm. We're here to ask you to please consider donating to the podcast. You can do so by going to patreon.com/integratedrhythm. You can do so by Venmoing at Bobby Swungover. And make sure to put a little IR in the note so we make sure it goes to the right people. You can also do so by PayPaling at Bobby White 3. And once again, putting a little IR in the window there. Doing so will help us keep this podcast going, and we love doing it, and we hope you love it too. If you can't afford to donate at this time because times are rough, we totally understand. We don't want you to put yourselves out. We want you to keep enjoying the podcast for free. However, if you have a little bit of pocket change in your pocket, we would greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thanks, and have a great day.
And one of my favorite things to say right now is that where we exist is at the intersection of seemingly opposing ideas. So while while oppression impacts all of us and we all experience moments where we're disadvantaged, privilege is just as important to examine as well. And what is tough about privilege is that it is so baked in the way that we function that it is hidden from us. And so we are often unaware of the privileges that we carry, often until we lose something or until something shifts. And so, then this also impacts us differently with intersectionality, right? So I often say, and I try to say this so that people can see, like, oh, if an immigrant who is, because if you think about the spheres of influence, there are like the spheres of oppression. Sorry. So I'm actually just going to point to a resource. There's a resource called The Power of Flower, The Flower of Power. I always get that mixed up. But if you type in The Flower of Power, you might be like, what is this? The 1970s? Well, it's not the 1970s, but this is a really cool tool. It kind of easily shows you different aspects of oppression. So involved in that are like citizenship, age, ability level, sexual orientation, gender expression, gender identity, race, class, and with that is also like education level, all of that. If you look at that, I'm actually pretty mixed in terms of my privilege, because I'm a woman. And if we look at kind of like, and I have a hard time saying male, female dynamic, because I also want to acknowledge my non-binary and gender non-conforming friends. So, but within the existing system, the way that we're socialized, that false binary is opposed. And so of the two, the female is inferior. So, so being a woman, being Black, so being far on that racialized spectrum, because this is the other thing, is that race is also a spectrum, and any person with a racialized identity is impacted when we have incidences of racial violence. Just wanted to throw that out there, given the current landscape. You need to say that. Being an immigrant and having been of like somewhat lower socioeconomic status for a good part of my life, like there are a lot of things about my identity that are marginalized. But I'm an academic. So I sit at the top of, I am now a tenured faculty member. I'm an associate professor. I know, bougie snaps. I'm published. As a friend of mine reminded me, I take up all four pages. If you search me on Google, like there are four pages of Google before you get to somebody else with a similar name. Like there are lots of things about me that have privilege and
which
power.
Which is why we call her Four Pages, by the way.
Such a good nickname. And so four pages.
If Char-char, that's your rapping name.
AKA Four Pages.
Four Pages. Yes.
That's your rapping name.
Charcuterie, yeah. Four Pages. Listen to an earlier episode to get the Char-char joke. I won't tell you which one, so you have to listen to all of them. But if I don't acknowledge where I have privilege and power, then I become harmful. Unexamined power and unexamined privilege sets you up to perpetuate systems of oppression and sets you up to incur harm, even to people who look like you. And so it is, and I say that if you're from a racialized minority, but the statement unexamined power is harmful is for everybody. That is for everybody. And so I talk about it for me so that people who obviously have more power can see that they need to, you need to ask some questions, you need to do some work. And you didn't put those systems of oppression in place, but you are culpable and complicit if you don't ask some questions. And so go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's like the Facebook algorithm. Like it rewards you for participating in it. So if you find a way to quote unquote make the system work for you, which just means like abiding by the standards set for people of your race or your, you know, whatever your like area of minority is, then abiding by the rules that like make it more acceptable to a like white male dominated society, white cis male dominated society. And so if you ever say like, I got here by myself and I am talking to my non-white friends out there, like if you say that I got here by myself, you are wrong. and there are people who came up alongside you, who encouraged you. There are people who stood for you when other people didn't want to believe in you. There are people who listened, like who were the shoulders you leaned on. Like there, you have contemporaries in this. You just may not realize it. And I like, it's so easy to fall into that trap of being like, well, it's like, I can see the system because I've gone through something similar, or because like, I'm above all that stuff. I just want people to see me for me and not me as a person of color. And, but that's actually part of that algorithm that rewards you of being like, no, be colorblind, or tell me how brave it is that I don't conform to gender, or tell me how, how even though I am not your expectation of X, Y, or Z, that I make you feel comfortable. Yes, I'll allow you to touch my hair. Yes, I'll allow you to, like, I will ignore your microaggressions. Like, that's part of that, that system rewards such behaviors. And sometimes that reward is like, you get put in a position of power and influence, be it teaching, be it performing, be it like you just like are blowing it up in competitions. And you think like, yeah, I did it. I'm nailing this. But you're just on Facebook all the time. So Facebook rewards you. Like, like that's what it is.
Yeah. And what's challenging, what as you mentioned, as a non-white individual, you have that. You're like, so for people who are aware, like yourself, you're like, how is the system rewarding me, and how am I here because of merit? But those who don't have that checked, like, yes, there is merit involved, but there are also systems in place. You are standing on the shoulders of giants. You're standing on other people's shoulders to get to where you are. And so it, not acknowledging that is harmful. And so, yeah.
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 There's a lot of, sorry, Bobby, just like real quick. So for example, I know Michelle talked about that there can only be one black discomfort. we were warned about it, and I know people don't want to admit that it is often the case, but it doesn't, if just because you got to be the black who was the one doesn't mean you're going to be the black another day or in another competition, or like eventually they're going to get tired of you. Like, it's just, it can be so tempting to just ignore the system in order to have a modicum of self-worth and sanity, because it's so easy to fall into that crazy making of tokenism versus devaluing. And so, yeah, it's so tempting, just like it is tempting to be like, look, because only bad people are racist, I cannot display racist behaviors because I'm not a bad person, in that trap of thinking, and therefore not examining your own privileges, like somebody in the dominating society, part of society. It can be tempting if you are benefiting from the system and you are not like, you don't look like or sound like or walk like or talk like that part of the dominating society, to just not examine it and be like, I did it. I nailed it. Sucks for them other hoes. Cause I am crushing. People just need to get on my level is all. That's basically it, without actually examining, how you got there. Cause it breaks. It's another way that Lindy Hop hurts us. It's a way that literally everything in this society hurts us. Because it just like, it sucks. It would suck to re-examine a situation and be like, oh, I see what happened. It was that they decided there could only be one Black and I was the like most beneficial choice to them. In that, like, I provided the most value to them as a judge or an organization or whatever, instead of I was just the most skilled dancer in that competition, or I was the, like, I got the best feedback as a teacher.
I did want to say, I wanted to say a thing. There was a thing that I forgot and then I remembered it just now. You were talking about the pandemic and how you had all these people reach out to you because they're trying to show support. They don't, they have like, I'm going to say like, maybe immature allyship, like they're like an, awkward allyship.
Yes.
To be a little
baby steps.
Yes. Yeah. And so well-intentioned, but then they don't realize that as they're reaching out and asking you how you're doing and asking you intrusive questions, they're now like putting the burden on you to explain how you feel in a time that is challenging. And so, I mean, I remember like May, June, July of 2020 was heart-wrenching and hard. And but when you're going through trauma like that, or you're being, your trauma's being re-injured, you have your people and you have your safe people where you have an established safety and security. And so when other people are trying to get into that space for their educational value, then that's hard, because a lot of what we were dealing with and a lot of what we're dealing with now for some people is an intellectual exercise, but for us is our lives. And so I even think about like the rise in anti-Asian sentiment, the racialized incidences that have been happening with our Asian American and Pacific Islander friends. Like, I've even wondered how to be an ally, and I've found myself in that space of awkward allyship, wanting to reach out. But I also remembered when the shoe was on the other foot, like that I didn't appreciate people coming out of the woodwork expecting me to explain myself and explain how I am. And so I hope that when people hear this, they hear this carefully and hear that compassion and the desire to learn are beautiful things. Putting the burden on somebody else to emotionally process or go through an educational experience for you to educate you as to why right now is hard is also not okay. That you can deal with that by doing some reading. So I heard that, and I just wanted to take a moment and really say, like, it's what you're talking about is so real. And there are lots of people who don't realize that they were actually doing something, once again, demonstrating awkward allyship. And another word that I kind of thought of today, but I realized somebody else coined it, is a stormy weather friend. And so someone who shows up when it's rough, but not in a way, like they're not always there. They're like, oh, it's hard. So that's are you, great. You know, so,
Yeah. It's like on the average day, they're the person that like you acknowledge across the room and you're like, okay, we both knew each other out there. And then as soon as you like look unhappy, they're like, yeah, girl, tell me about it, sister.
Yeah.
who do we need to fight? I'll take my earrings off for you, right, girlfriend? You're like, ugh. I mean,
all right, what was your name again?
Do you exactly. know who I am? Yeah, I mean, on a personal level, and I know this differs for everybody. So I appreciated people saying, I'm thinking of you, because they knew to be. I mean, and I imagine it's the same for a lot of people in the Asian American and Pacific Islander communities right now. Like, if somebody asks, how are you? Well, the answer is heartbroken. And heartbroken for months on end. Like, and every time I see footage or hear of a new incident of violence, or it escalates and then the perpetrator is excused by people who have also exhibited the same types of racism or discrimination, heartbroken. The answer is heartbroken. So asking me to like constantly relive that, not fun. Don't ask me how I am. But if you just tell me like, hey, I know like you're acknowledging that we're not, you're not close enough for you to like call me, but, right. to just be like, hey, I'm thinking of you. Or I know like Michelle said that somebody like just sent her food, just like through, cause you can, I don't know if it was like what delivery service, but they didn't live here. They're like, you know what? I'm just going to send you dinner. I know today probably was a rough day for you. Like, awesome. Like that's actually very thoughtful and demonstrate, you know, you're using the resources that you have available to you to just like show support without, being, burdensome. I'll put it this way. Yeah. I don't know if any person who spends most of their time in a men's bathroom can relate, but I will say for women, if somebody comes into a bathroom and says, does anybody have a tampon? Nobody's like, tell me about your flow and how long you've had it and when you first had it, because I'm about to tell you about mine. Somebody's just like, yes, I do. Or no, I don't. Like, we're not. Yeah. Like, yeah. Let's get into the nitty gritty. It's just like, you know, if you can give a stranger a tampon, you do it. And then you're just like, you know, right along here as I do. Or to use a less like periody example, a rubber band or a hair tie. Like, does anybody have a hair tie? And somebody might up like the number of strangers who give each other hair ties in this world. Massive. Massive. You don't have to know a single human being in the room to ask if anybody has a hair tie, because the experience of having, for a lot of people, having hair like in their face or sticking to their neck is familiar. And so if they have a hair tie, they might, you know, pass it along. So like using the resources that you have to support people you don't really know, it doesn't have to be a massive demonstration of like, I stand with you and I have learned some things and I want to tell you all about the things I learned and have you pat me on the back. You can just give him a hair tie.
I love the hair tie and the tampon example, because you're right. Like, well, also, like you said, anyone who hasn't had experiences in a woman's bathroom doesn't necessarily know how for we are, like how much, like you don't know somebody, but that is a place of bonding. Like you walk into the bathroom strangers, but then like there's this like code where it's like, you look great, girl, get it. You know, like you need a tampon, here you go. But the response isn't like a litany or a history of periods. You know, it's not like, oh, I know all these scientific facts about women's bodies and how you might have gotten to this point in your cycle. And then, what's your last cycle, 28 days ago? Or was it 31 days ago? Because I hear if you say, you know, like it's not demonstrating empathy, isn't like throwing those facts at that person or asking questions like, oh, well, did your mother also have a heavy flow? And, you know, so it doesn't.
By the way.
Prove to me that you have menstruation.
Are you on your period right now? Why do you need this tampon?
To me. I don't think your period is as bad as you said. I don't have proof of that.
But how can I know?
Going back to toxic masculinity, I wish this would happen in our bathrooms. Not, I wish that like people would be like, looking good. I don't know who you are, but like, killing it, man. Get out there. You know, I would appreciate that.
Yeah. It would. I mean, it does require some vulnerability, because like in a woman's bathroom, you might be alone and be like, does this look okay? You just got to trust a stranger to be like, yeah, and I mean it. Or to be like, or to be like, should I wear this tucked or untucked? And they're like, untucked, get out there. So you've got to come, like, it's not like you're just standing there and people are just like offering tampons. You got to have that moment of vulnerability to be like, I am bleeding. I doth bleed. Someone come to my aid. When are you more vulnerable?
I want to give a quick, if this ends up on the actual episode, I want to give a quick shout out to Shelby Johnson, who I know works really hard on giving that kind of positive energy at like gyms and that kind of stuff. And I think it's just so awesome.
That's
excellent.
You know, Bobby, you bring up a really good point though, about like, response, like toxic masculinity and support, because women, I think, are like, there are a couple sayings where people will be like, women don't actually dress up for men, they dress up for other women, you know, like whatever, there's like nonsense out there, but women, I think, because we realize that we're just like under the harsh, like consistent eye of the male gaze and like ridiculous beauty standards, whether or not we're cis or het, like we're just constantly, yeah, like we're under this brutalizing situation. I think we compensate for that by like having each other's backs and being like, you know what, you look really cute, or like, like we do this thing. But conversely, I don't, men need to be told that they're beautiful.
Right.
And
we don't
do a good job of saying like, hey,
inversely, men need to be honest about how much the media and their own upbringing and all that kind of stuff plays a role in their desires to look a certain way or in their own image of themselves.
I was going to say, I'm with you on that. I wore a full face of makeup, including lipstick yesterday for a presentation. And I was in a meeting with a committee that I lead and or like a subgroup of that committee. And I heard audible gasps when my camera turned on, because they were like, oh, you're so beautiful. And I was like, dang it. Damn, I don't wear makeup.
No one I've ever seen on Zoom looks that good in the last year. Oh, my God. Like, what has happened to us?
Exactly. Like, what's going on?
Chisomo.
We worship.
You know, I was just like, I clearly need to put on, just like throw on some makeup from time to time. Like, it was just like, but the like,
last break.
Yeah.
Contacts in, like, I was ready for my close up. Like, and, but yeah, but I
mean, it's probably, look, you in just your natural face, set the standard high. So like, it's already you're not gross on camera. So like, that's already,
yeah, there's a residual boom whenever you come on camera.
Yeah. So it's like,
which is another reason why we call you residual boom.
Yes.
4 pages residual boom. Sorry.
They call me 4 pages residual boom. Charcuterie taking over the room. That's the end of my rapping. But no, so for you, like putting on a face of makeup is like when Wonder Woman gets her full powers. It's like when she's in the sky and like, ka-ka! And like the, you know, like the Jesus pose, like you already know that she was gorgeous throughout the movie, but now you're like, ah, I see your true power. It's a woman. And it's, you're just, you become emblazoned on their minds in a new way. Like, I could dominate, I could rule all of you, and I remind you of that today.
Well, so this is the reason why you have hot friends. You make them hot. You keep talking like that, anybody will show up and show out and like will not be stopped. You know, like they have Laurel Ryan in their ear and they're like, yes. Yes, I am hot. Like that's, all of the things that you said, I appreciate. I will take them. I will listen to them. But, you know,
I like to give a compliment.
This makes me think of like kind of a nirvana of hotness, which is devoid of image and is actually just like pure reflected swagger and confidence in one's oneness.
Like, in
penis. Like today I am me up to 11.
In purest form.
The nirvana of hotness.
Yes. I love that.
Another thing I'll say about like the compliment thing is, and this podcast will never end. Go back to when I was like maybe a year in and being taught, like being told about shown competitions, and then to be told like who actually deserved to win or why the winners won, or to just be given just an onslaught of opinions and be like, sure, I trust you. Yes. Both positive and negative. And then, also to like feel the weight of, especially unintentional discrimination. Cause again, I would say most people involved in Lindy Hop are not intentionally and actively, discriminatory. They just don't, not aware of it. Well, anyway, we've talked about that. But so like feeling that weight, then I would look around at especially the followers either around me who I was trying to, quote, to fight for a class placement level or to fight to get into these prelims or to fight to get from the prelims to the finals, or who were being exalted as the advanced dancers or just throwing themselves into the jam circles, like, look what I can do. And I would feel such like self-preservationist disdain, like just to like make myself feel better. My body was, or my brain was like, you know what? They suck is the thing. And you're fine. And you don't need to change. And it's just that they are dumb and stupid. And probably very mean. You don't like them. Anyway, because I wasn't seeing myself represented. I saw, and I don't even remember her name. It was a gorgeous dancer from the West Coast in like a competition one time at ILHC. And then like D-Lock, I hadn't learned that Marie was dancing yet. So I saw one person in the entire dance who I was like, kind of looks like me, except she's like 10 times cooler than I'll ever be. So, you know. There's no catching up to people who are continuing to practice their craft. So I'll just be this guy. And when I realized that I was doing this, of just like dismissing everybody who was achieving something that I wanted and couldn't have, I started to watch and challenge myself to find something that I liked about the way that they danced. And to find, or when I was around them, to find something that I liked about them as a person. And it turns out that there are a lot of cool people doing cool things in this dance who I like love to spend time with and get to know. But if I had allowed myself to just be like, well, she just gets fucked because she's beautiful and blonde and an ideal gazelle of a woman. Nobody's going to pay attention to a little bulldog puppy like me. Like she could never relate. Then I'm, possibly robbing myself of a, if not a friendship, at least like a fun interaction with somebody. Or I would like, I would ask to dance with some of these followers who I would just feel this jealousy of. So it started to become a practice of like, checking in when I was being particularly negative about other people, or I was focusing on one person in particular and be like, they have done nothing to you. Okay. They're just trying to do their best in this world. They didn't spit in your eye, or like try and push you down the stairs. Be nice, you dummy. And that that not only allowed me to be less like to just feel less hurt and to need that like self-preservationist like disdain less, but also it allowed me to focus, like to turn that same practice inward. I mean, like, okay, what do I like about the way that I dance? What do I enjoy about myself, since I'm being constantly told to change from the outside? And of course, when I watch myself on video, I don't look anything like the people who I wish I looked like do. Don't have the same body type, don't have the same like, you know, I don't have the same partner to practice with, I don't have as much time to practice as they do, I don't have like as active a scene, or I don't blah, blah, like all the other reasons why we are different people. You know, rather I could just focus on what I enjoyed, and that changed my perspective entirely. And that thing about like Lindy Hop hurting me, I was able to endure those hurts a lot. Like, I never thought, well, maybe I should quit Lindy Hop, because I could find value in what I brought to the dance, regardless of what the people around me were doing. So I like that bringing the bathroom attitude of like, you're doing great, the mirror loves you, I love you, get out there and slay, queen. Like bringing that attitude to the rest of, you know, outside of the bathroom, applying it to ourselves really does make a difference. You know, without falling into the trap of like toxic positivity, if we're like, nothing's wrong. Sure, things are wrong, but you can deal with them better if you have practiced finding positivity.
Integrated rhythm with Jasomo and Bobby.